Great, particularly three men chatting about mental health. I see in my teaching lost boys, we have a dislocation of boys in particular who are disengaged. Social media has caused much of this. Well done to the panel. Great heart talk. Well done. Great to have men talk, and I hope men are listening. Well done, Highland. The poster is hanging in my classroom, and it reads, "It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." That is a Frederick Douglass quote. And there's a lot of competition. We have an awful lot of competition for our boys and girls' mental well-being, a lot of competition. We're trying to do our best as a society, as family, as a community. But there's an awful lot of people working against us in that regard. And often they're held up as being some sort of saviours or heroes. But the consequences of their teachings, their influence, we just simply don't know. And that's in many different areas, which I could go into. It'd be easier for me to go into off air. But, you know, I do believe, I firmly believe that our children need our guidance. And they need to be told that they can feel certain ways at certain times and things might change or what have you. But we need to protect our children and treat them as children and not interfere with their childhood. And then when they're adults, hopefully they're tooled up to know exactly what they want or what's right for them and to do the right thing in their lives for them. But we need to protect our children and make sure we're doing that, whether it's how we teach them, whether it's how we support their mental health, whether it's any ideologies, whatever it might be, whatever we're doing, we have to make sure we are doing it right and to protect innocent little children. When I was 17, I was effectively 8. I was emotionally 8. You know what I mean? I wasn't, even though I'd left school, right, at that age, I was still a kid, really. I would have been so easy to influence and to guide, or, you know, I was shy. I was more of a, the follower than a leader. Thankfully, I was never led any down any paths or anything, never did anything wrong of any great note. But my point is, you know, 17, it's not all it's cracked up to be. A lot of us are not mature 17-year-olds or 15-year-olds or 16-year-olds, you know, and we're not ready for all the big stuff that's been talked about. Sometimes actually out of school books as well. Greg, much of society today is lacking in prayer and a relationship with Jesus. I'll be spending time praying for this cause this Saturday. God bless. Thank you. And that's where you find your comfort. It's not going to be for everyone. Re-travelling to the United States for students. People clearing their social media to be able to get into the US. That's exactly the move the US administration wants. They don't want anyone able to publicly denounce their great golden God and will deport even natural-born US citizens to a death camp over it. And this is not a speculative death camp, by the way. It's an actual death camp. If you look up CCOT, isn't it? The El Salvadorian prison they are deporting people to on live satellite feeds. You can see a mountain of dead bodies, and they've the gall to try and talk down to us over here over hate speech laws. I've seen the images you're talking of, and I know that's what you view them as, but a lot of that is speculation as to whether that is bodies and the dust, or whether this is humans that are perishing there, or if it's animals. I don't know, but I understand where you're coming from, but I tend to read up on a lot of different things, and I've seen what you're talking of. I hope it's not what you say it is, but you may well be right. It's unfortunate, but I legitimately think all student visas to the US should be cancelled from the home side. We shouldn't be risking our kids to the whims of US ICE. At the same time, it's like everything on this programme. I really try, and I don't want to sort of go one extreme to the other. So listen, actually, the amount of people that holiday in America has fallen off quite significantly. But America, for the most part, is a very safe place. More people going to America are going to Disneyland, they're going to Florida, they're going to, they're going on a cruise. You know, it's just normal America over there. But there are certain places that you could go in any particular country where you could be at a greater danger of something. It's like every country. So whilst we have to put it out there that students should be cautious and understand and be educated, it doesn't mean it's not a safe place to go. But maybe politically you might want to make a protest. I don't know. Right, Greg, it's time the media told the people to not let their children go on a visa or anything else to the US, says another listener. The USA is always talking about how Russia prevents free speech and all other restrictions. Keep away from this country until they realise where they are going with this stuff. Hi, Greg. Yes, I 100% agree that EpiPen should be available as much as Defib. So my daughter suffers with a severe nut allergy. It's very concerning and feel it would be slightly less worrying if EpiPens were so readily available as Defibs are. Thank you for highlighting this matter. Yeah, that's why I wanted to mention it, because it seemed like a really good idea. I mean, we have the cabinets there, and these are life-saving pens. I just liked it. I liked the story. It was buried in one of the papers, and I thought, wow, okay, there's something we could do with that, is there? Right, just to some requests before we take a break, and I think I have one came into my social media. I'll check that as I read others. Happy 18th birthday, Aoife Gallagher in Galdonna, Manor Cunningham, from Mummy, Daddy, Sophie and Anita, and her big brother PJ over in Perth. Please play some Luke Combs. I can't do that. John or David definitely will. Happy birthday, Aoife. Another one for you, Aoife Gallagher. Oh, Aoife works down at the Chili Pepper. Happy birthday from all you co-workers in the Yellow Pepper. Greg, could you please wish my dad, Matt Moore, Ard Columkill Letterkenny, a very happy 94th birthday for today. Lots of love from Betty, Eddie, Marty, Laura, and great-grandsons Finlay and Freddie. So a big happy birthday to you, Matt Moore, hopefully listening to us in Ard Columkill in Letterkenny. He's 94 today. Fair play to you. I hope you're being spoilt rotten. I'm sure you are.
The county's number one talk show, The 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
Okay, we're joined on the programme now by John Joe McGowan, Chief Ambulance Officer with HSE Ambulance Service based in the West. Thanks so much for calling up to us, John Joe.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
We've an important issue to talk about in a moment, but just whilst I have you, I wouldn't mind asking you about the situation as it relates to your crews accessing Letterkenny University Hospital. I've received numerous videos at this stage, and it's heartbreaking to watch, and I can only imagine what it's like for the crews, whereby you will have an ambulance coming in the four lanes. These are the videos I generally get sent, coming in the four lanes, and you know, the blues are on, the lights are on. Traffic is sitting there trying to get out of its way. There's high curves. It's hard for them to do so. And I'm just wondering, is there a line on this or a point of view on this from your perspective? It must be a concern, is it?
Yeah, indeed, Greg. And this is a situation that is quite prominent in the media from time to time. And when there is video circulating in relation to it, we do recognise it as an issue. And we spoke with Donegal County Council, and we've actually met Donegal County Council and their representatives on site on the four lanes. We've watched the traffic flow. We've actually brought CCTV footage from our ambulances to the council so that they can see where the pinch points is. What we call it in emergency driving is wriggle room. So we need a little bit of wriggle room. So a car moves slightly left and a car moves slightly right to allow us access through the middle or through the side.
But the problem is in many locations, you've got a concrete barrier to the right, and you've got these bollards or high curves or low bollards to the left.
Indeed, yeah. So that's a big concern in relation to the four lanes, and especially that stretch between the Dry Arch roundabout and the Dry Arch roundabout and the Polestar roundabout. That's a big concern there. We do things, and you'll be aware of them, we talked about them here, around busy weekends like the rally, where we put diversions in place and use the Cullion Road as an emergency access route. So we've met the council on site in relation to this. And what we're proposing is that there is a lowering of the kerb from the Cullion Road into the roundabout, because it seems to be the main sticking point. Now, we're realistic too, and we realise that we can't get the whole four lanes changed. We believe that if the lowering of that kerb from the Cullion Road to the Polestar roundabout is done, that would ease the traffic and allow the traffic out more, so that we get that wriggle room.
It's a little bit crazy that the solution is that the curve for drivers to go up on would be lower. But I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, isn't it?
It's an immovable feast. It's a bridge and two big concrete bollards on each side. So we would be against our drivers going onto the footpath fully, because it's just too dangerous. It's a highly risky move, and we would be completely against that. So we have to have sort of a dropping off the kerb and easing off the vehicles onto it. We've done a lot of work with the County Council post this in relation to all the other roads that's leading in. There's a huge infrastructure project in relation to active travel going into all roads into Letterkenny. You'll have heard ones talked about like the Ballyrain Road, etc. The Hospital Road actually is another one where we've done extensive works with them. And on that, we have developed and we set it out down at their site down in the Neil T. Blinney Road, where we lay it all out, and we done it up as a mock, and we took ambulances down and went through it. But that's where the care will be dropped significantly. There'll be a bandwidth of about a metre, where there is it's like a corrugated concrete. There's grass can grow up through it, but it's technically concrete corrugated. And the cars can move on to that to allow us through. And we're going to do a huge public awareness campaign when the work starts here.
We look forward to assisting with that, if that's okay. But I don't want to ask you a question that puts you into spot, so you can brush it off before we move on. Would you see the four lanes was flawed in design, in that it didn't accommodate emergency vehicles?
If we take, for instance, when we travel to Dublin, or there's loads of places like this around Ireland, it only becomes a problem when there's peak traffic periods, and we try as best we can to get through it. And look, hindsight's a great thing, but yeah, if the actions that we're now taking for the further roads will stop this issue, hopefully happening in the future.
Appreciate you commentating on that. Actually, one other thing we were talking about, and you just mentioned this in passing, the EpiPens, and a call from a senator to have them located in where defibs are, because we've got the fantastic network of defibs now. You pointed out a potential issue with that.
They're a drug. There's pharmacy regulations in relation to them. So it's not a bad idea, and I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater in relation to it. But it's an idea that could be definitely looked at. Now, there's end of life dates in relation to medications that would be a lot less than the defib pads, etc. So who would monitor that and all that? Definitely worth something exploring.
But it would require a lot more upkeep and maintenance, because if they're there, they have to be working, don't they?
Exactly. Well, they have to be end date. Their drugs are just like a food substance. They have an end date. Mm. The dates are quite short in them. Some drugs require refrigeration. Mm. The defib cabinets are actually heated.
Starts getting complicated.
Yeah, it gets complicated, but it's not an impossible task feature.
Because, of course, the heat, presumably, protect the batteries of the defib and elsewhere.
Yeah, in the colder weather.
All right. Now, you've been made aware, the ambulance service has been made aware of members of the public that recently received letters falsely claiming to represent the NAS, the National Ambulance Service. What happened here, John?
Yeah, this is a strange one, Greg. I never did I think it would be on your show talking about a scam in relation to the ambulance services, more in relation to buying and selling the products or trying to scam people out of money, not ambulance service calls. So it's slightly strange. Now, we do think that it's an isolated incident in relation to this, but we want to make the public aware that it's out there. It's on our Facebook page, the actual letter that was received. And we just want to make the public aware that this is not something that we would ever do. Now, there is processes where we have frequent callers, and there's a multidisciplinary team put in to work with them frequent callers. That multidisciplinary team consists of the Gardaí, public health nurses, social workers, ourselves, etc. So there is a process around this, and we never just write to anybody to say don't call an ambulance. This letter was basically sent to an elderly couple. So the story behind it is we received a 999 call for an elderly couple, and I'll not go into the details for purposes of GDPR. But we received the 999 call to them. The crew went out, and the crew, when they were out, noticed something off or something not right. Mm. They explored it a little bit more with the patient and the family, and they eventually got it out of them that they've received a letter from the National Ambulance Service. And the letter went along the lines of, you're using ambulance services unnecessarily. And do not call unless it's an emergency. Do not call the ambulance again unless it's an emergency situation. And where the ambulance service is severely limited at this time. And it went on to explain what a life-threatening emergency would be. Now, it has been investigated. We've passed it on to the Gardaí, and it has been investigated by the Gardaí at this time. So the process for that is completely outside anything we would do. We would never, ever, ever do anything like this. And what we are encouraging the public, if they need an ambulance, to call 999 or 112 when needed.
It's being investigated, and I have to be careful, and, yeah. and it's completely anonymous because of, and it has to be for GDPR. But this could be an incident whereby one individual is being mischievous with the victims of this.
Yeah.
Because there's no sort of gain as such, is there? There's no follow this link.
No, there's none that we can see, or there's none that we can, we can't attribute it, this to anything. It's something that we've never seen before, actually. And we just, our real emphasis is to make the public aware it's not something that we
for
do.
For sure, because we don't know if 15, if these letters went out.
Yeah.
Or if it's one at this, this point. That's now, why this we, is
we,
so...
We're off the belief, that, and we're off the hope, actually, that this is an isolated incident. But we made the decision, well, first of all, it was brought to our attention. We brought it to the Gardaí's attention. And then along in conjunction with the clinical director last week, or the end of last week, the start of this week, we made the decision to make the letter public and to show the people that it's not something, and explain that this is not something we would ever do. And there is processes around... frequent callers, and that's it's a huge, a far bigger process than just us sending a letter out to somebody to say them not. The other thing to make aware is when you dial 999 for an ambulance, it's not just a process anymore. If you dial, you give your details and an ambulance is sent to you. The whole process now evolves around a call taker takes a series of questions, which is called an AMPTS, Advanced Medical Priority Dispatch System. They take the questions, the call is triaged and given a category. For simplicity purposes, the categories are very serious and not serious.
And that will become clear very, that will become clear very quickly.
Yeah.
What's the nature of your call? My dad's lying on the floor, he's just collapsed. Yeah. Then obviously... So you're not, you don't then go down the line of figuring out if it's a broken toenail.
No.
You know, I don't want people to feel that this is an extra layer of delay.
No, definitely not. The most serious calls are taken from call to an ambulance mobile is within 90 seconds, and that's our time frame or our key performance indicator. After that, it becomes more... it becomes more prevalent of the seriousness of the call or how serious is the call, and then they can take the steps and the further questioning. But the ultimate, as they're questioning you, the ambulance is still en route to your house where necessary.
And we've seen, you know, I watch a few American shows. That seems to be kind of the normal situation.
It's an international. It's an international
because they, you know, they continue to ask questions, and then they have to sometimes remind the listener in a panic situation, "Oh, the ambulance is on the way."
Yeah, yeah.
Because then to determine if there's any CPR intervention or whatever,
The call taker will take you through the steps and tell you the steps of CPR. They'll even tell you where your nearest defib is, the code to access it, because we have them all logged on our system. Well,
they're very good. I've had occasion to, and I found them very calm and helpful.
Yeah,
they're
extremely professional.
And firm, maybe if you need it sometimes.
And they have to be at sometimes,
I mean, what I mean by that is to focus you, not to give out.
The other piece then in relation to that is the calls that, what we call them professionally, is low acuity calls, which would be the less serious calls. They are put into a secondary triage system. So they're calls that we would determine that maybe don't need an ambulance, and there could be an alternative care pathway for them people. So they're flipped over to a secondary triage system. A doctor, a nurse, or an advanced paramedic will take you through another range of questions and give you more advice or maybe help or tease it out a little bit more. And then they may transfer you. They may do a number of things. They could send Pathfinder to you. They could send a community paramedic to you. They could send... they could tell you to stay at home and we'll call back in with you in a number of hours to see how you're getting on. Or they could say, right, okay, you need an ambulance. It's not an emergency situation, and once we get an ambulance cleared up and things get less busy, we'll send one
to
you.
It's about prioritising resources. But if you're on the other end of that, it might not sound great, but at the end of the day...
Anybody that's calling 999 is in a panic or is in a situation that they've never found themselves in before, and it's an extreme sense of panic. But then you have somebody on the other end of the line telling you, no, you're not in an emergency situation. You may think you are, but from our systems, you're not. And that's
how,
a difficult thing
how are
to
we
do.
Finding the system working now, John Joe? In that, you know, in the past we had stories, and sometimes they're isolated incidents and they grow legs. But say, for instance, an ambulance being sent from Killybegs to just below Letterkenny or something, but you know what I mean. Now I know there's a, but is that functioning better now?
Yeah, we've put more parameters in around that. It's really down to a demand versus capacity type thing. And we've seen it on a load of occasions where we get reports in the media, the ambulance was sent from Killybegs to Gitmey, or the ambulance was sent from Carrick and Shannon to Fannad or Carrigart or wherever. In them, not all of them, there is certain circumstances where the ambulance have been delayed and have travelled long journeys. But in some of them circumstances, we move ambulances around a lot. So say, for instance, we have two ambulances in Dunloe today and we have four emergency ambulances on in Letterkenny, three today actually. Say the three in Letterkenny was out on calls and Dunloe happened to be in on an emergency run and there was still one back at Dunloe. Letterkenny's all out. We would hold Dunloe in Letterkenny to cover for that period until we get another Letterkenny ambulance free. Thus, a Dunloe ambulance could be doing a call in Remelton. It didn't come from Dunloe. It was actually based in things. So we move them about.
So its point of origin could be quoted rather than its static location
the
as crew, cover.
The crew get out and they're speaking to the family, oh, we're a Dunloe crew, and thus then the perception could be that the ambulance came from Dunloe. That is not always the case, and there is times where there has been delayed responses, and we're working on that. We're working to try and bolster our resources and heighten them, and we're also working on trying to keep as many people out of hospital as possible with the
Pathfinder, and
the community paramedic, which is equally as good as well.
And is there any issues at this time when we hear from the HSC about pressures on Letterkenny University Hospital? We recall images of seven or eight ambulances lined up there. It's not the ambulance service's fault. They're waiting to discharge patients. Is that a problem that we're seeing with more regularity?
Yeah, that's not just a problem in Letterkenny Hospital.
No, of course
that's,
it's not.
If you Google it, they call it rampant in Australia and America and that. It's a huge problem worldwide with all ambulance services where they're delayed in the ED departments. Letterkenny have done immense work with us over the last 2 years, most predominantly. We've really knuckled down with them. It's not there yet, we will say that. It's still a work in progress, but just one quick statistic. And we started off big on this to try and so that we could get gains so that we could further progress it. One very simple statistic that the ambulance was delayed for over 3 hours. They've cut that figure in half and they've cut all their figures in relation to 3 hours, 2 hours, 1 hour. They've cut them all down over the last 2 years. It's a capacity versus space issue. What's coming in is...
But those patients are also in the care of medical professionals in the ambulance at the same time, aren't they? So
they definitely are. But what the problem in on our side is we don't have the ambulances to respond in the community. Now, the Pathfinders, the community paramedics and the views of trying, and the ICPOPs, all the other HSE systems, trying to keep people out of the hospital is where we're focusing on our attention these times to try and, the call volume is still going up. It's gone up, I think, at least 7% in the last year. Alone in Donegal.
Ambulance calls.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's huge.
Yeah, very hard to have a staff and equipment to match that kind of...
We're taking approximately, in general terms, on an average, is we could be taking at least 50 patients to Letterkenny Hospital a day.
Okay. Right. Finola joins me briefly. It's just actually to praise the ambulance service. I'll let you hear much of it, I think. Finola, your experience of the ambulance service?
Yeah, Greg, I just want to thank the team that came out. And my husband was running a very high temperature and I didn't know what was wrong with him at all. And he was shaking. And the team came out and stayed with us till they got a handover. And it took from 8 o'clock at least when he went in an ambulance to 3 o'clock, and only they knew what to do, and very professional, and I want to thank them for their good work.
Brilliant. And your husband's okay now?
Thank God, recovering.
Good stuff. We'll pass on our best wishes
at the time.
Thank you.
I was shocked, really shocked. I've been in and out of the hospital different times, and I've never seen it the way it was that Monday morning. And everybody, you know, you just didn't even know who you would approach, and only they knew who to approach. I certainly didn't know.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, that's good that you had that service, Finola. Thank you. John Joe McGowan, thanks so much for covering those issues with us. It's something really important stuff for the public to know there as well. John Joe is Chief Ambulance Officer with HSE Ambulance Service based in the West. Now, as you would have heard a little earlier on, the Irish government has agreed to cooperation arrangement with the Umma bombing inquiry, a memorandum of understanding, which had been expected was signed off at a cabinet meeting in Dublin. John Fox is senior partner at Fox Law in Umma and represents 14 of the Umma families and a number of injured families. John, thank you for your time this morning. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
So on the face of it, this seems like progress. Is it everything that it needs to be from your perspective?
I think it's progress insofar as it's the first document to signify the Irish government's cooperation. So it'll give an opportunity to assess what that cooperation is going to look like. The difficulty that it seems to present is that the document seems very much focused on the UK terms of reference, which focuses on UK state agencies. And perhaps to give some context of benefit, inquiries have four stages. You have your terms of reference, which effectively sets out what the inquiry is going to do. And this inquiry in the UK is looking at UK state agencies. So this document goes nowhere on that issue as to whether we can assess what Irish state agencies may or may not have done. So in that regard, an opportunity has been missed.
How forthcoming do you believe or hope the government and agencies in the Republic will actually be? Because at the end of the day, too, it is up to they, is it not, to give over information or explain why they hadn't, which is also potentially a problematic caveat, is it?
Well, in terms of providing materials, I think it's commendable what the UK inquiry has achieved. This is unique. And what they've achieved is cooperation from the Irish government to fulfil its terms of reference. But again, it does not provide any commitment for the Irish government to permit any potential criticism towards Irish state agencies. And we cannot overlook that. Justice Horner in his judgment said that any investigation will have to look specifically at the issue of whether a more proactive campaign of disruption coordinated north and south of the border had a real prospect of preventing the Umma bomb. So that squarely looks at north of the border, UK state agencies. It squarely looks south of the border at Irish state agencies. And there is no answers as regards to Irish state agencies in this document, nor no answers coming from the Irish government at this time.
What kind of information might we get from the Irish government that would be useful to this inquiry? I think you've alluded to it there, but just to give people a better understanding of what the months and years ahead might.
A better understanding is that prior to the Umma bomb, there was potentially 32 prior attacks orchestrated by the Continuity IRA, the Provisional IRA, or the Real IRA. These were active terrorist organisations at that time. They were being coordinated both north and south of the border. Only 3 months before, a £980 bomb was seized at Dunleary under a Gardaí investigation. That relates to individuals who we believe may have been involved in the Umma bomb. So there is absolutely no doubt that the Irish state agencies were actively surveilling these individuals, were actively pursuing these individuals, as were the UK state agencies. The question arises, why was this bomb not prevented?
Which raises the question, without a level of compulsion, why would any state, for example, if it hasn't done up until now, provide information that may reflect poorly on the government of the time, on Garda Síochána, or you know, other security services in the Republic?
My answer is very simple to that, and that's for anybody who watched, viewed or heard the commemorative hearings for 4 weeks. I think there is no one that will stand in the way of these families and survivors in getting truth and justice. And for anybody to even signify to do so, I think would be a very discreditable position to take. I think there is no one within this island of Ireland that would stand in the way of getting to truth and justice. And I hope that the Irish government will equally commit to a similar proposition.
Okay, interesting, John. Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. That is John Fox, senior partner at Fox Law in OMA. He represents 14 of the OMA families and a number of injured families there. A caller says, hi, Greg. It was a disgrace. The money was spent on that road going into Letterkenny and no space for an ambulance to overtake. The people designed that road should be have to answer questions. Only in Ireland, they say. Switch off the lights on the Polestar and let traffic flow. I think that boat sailed. I'm not sure that's really going to be a solution at this point, because it's not just that road that has to be able to move freely as well. There's the Remelton Road. There's other roads as well. So often I think our view on the roundabout and traffic lights and road structures in general can be often heavily influenced by the roads that we take to and from work or school or what have you. But I'm just throwing that out there. The engineers or planners are more interested in getting cycle lanes up and running instead of traffic flowing easier through the town. Any town, it's not Letterkenny unique. Any town now is moving to a blend of travel, active travel. And we've seen other countries in other that they've done an awful lot of work on this already, where the infrastructure is there that cyclists, scooter riders, pedestrians and motorists can all use the same space effectively and safely. A caller says, could we just demolish the big ugly concrete bollard in the middle of the road? I've no idea who thought that was a good idea, but they should never be consulted on public planning ever again. Well, the idea was is that it would improve safety. That was the argument for it, that bollard and reduce speed limits. And everything else around it is window dressing. That seems to be, to me, from my coverage of it over the years, what they believed to be the solution. I didn't get the full interview, but I know you have to respect the laws of any land you are travelling to. I know that I can't go to Dubai and start protesting there, that I have to cover up or can't drink in public or any of their many laws. That's not permitted there. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's Dubai, though, and I've made this analogy myself. But the truth is Dubai is it's quite a strict country, isn't it? And not necessarily a way of life that everyone would like to live under. Are we saying that the United States is getting a bit like Dubai now? I don't know. And lastly, before the break, please tell Greg the word is tombola, not trombola. I haven't a clue what it is. I'd never heard the word trombola, tombola until I came in here and Fionnuala got this big draw drum. That's what I would have called it, a draw drum. And then I felt compelled, coerced into calling it a trombola, but I've never heard the word before. Is it a tombola? Will I always call it a tombola? I'll probably try. Is it annoying you? I'm sorry. But anyway, I never knew that word existed until I saw that one, as far as I'm aware. Right, okay. An interesting event being organised by Glenswilly GEA Social Club. Details on that next. All right, let's go to Glenswilly GEA and its social club, a member, Breda Doherty. Good morning, Breda.
Good morning, Greg.
Okay, right. So what have you organised? Well, firstly, what problem have you recognised? And then we'll talk, move on then, I suppose, to one of the ways to combat it.
So I suppose on Sunday night, we're organising a first and second year disco for an age group between probably 12 and 14 year olds. And it's 9:15 to 11:30 at the clubhouse in Glenswilly. So problems arising basically were that parents were very much interested in it and thought it was a great idea. And when we addressed it at the meeting in January, everyone at the meeting thought it was a great idea. And then when we started to put the word out there, we started to realise that maybe children were much happier at home in their own environment, talking to friends virtually rather than like coming out physically to meet them. And when we thought about maybe our own circumstances at home with a 13-year-old son, we actually started to look at our own probably environment where like he started school maybe in September, and apart from going and playing his sport probably 4 or 5 times a week, which is nearly enough for any child, he didn't have an awful lot of interaction. Like we would have been encouraging him maybe to go to town to do the virtual golf or the cinema or the bowling. And like he would have said, oh, sure, no one will go, Mum, or there's no one interested. Or so like we kind of left it at that, and just thought basically that's just first years and they haven't settled in properly and maybe, you know, struggling to make friends and stuff. But as the time was going on, we realised that there was loads of friends there and there was loads of interaction, but the interaction was actually happening from our conservatory. And it was on an Xbox or it was Snapchat or stuff like that. Yeah. So, as I say, I come up with this idea then of organising the disco, and I just thought, God, these kids is going to be absolutely mad to get out of the house. And the parents were all mad to get them out of the house, and the kids were very much content in the house.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it, Breida? That, you know, mums and dads are saying, right, you know, here's an event, and the young ones are going, yeah, but, you know, I'm taking part in an online tournament on that night or whatever it might be.
Yeah, so I suppose another bit of feedback that we would have gotten was that the girls were quite excited about it, and they were going to each other's houses maybe on Sunday to get ready and get the hair and makeup done. And although that's not really the type of disco we were actually, like, probably wanting to provide for them in one way, we were going down the route of like casual clothes and football jerseys, and it was basically just to make them comfortable, whatever they wanted to wear, you know, instead of like having to stay up with the latest trends and maybe throwing girls that would be body conscious.
There's only so much you can have control over, and I suppose if the girls are saying, right, we've a night out here, and for many it might be the first night out, they're going to run with that a little bit, aren't they, as well. But boys less excited about it. It's important we socialise, Breida. I think it's a good initiative because, you know, for many of us parents, I think it kind of suits us that the kids are in the house, because when they're in the house, they're safe. But then we also have to think about what happens when they hit, what happens when they have to go down to maybe to Galway to university, or what happens when they go for the first job interview. You can't, for the most part, do that remotely. You have to socialise in different environments, don't you? So I think from that perspective, it's a great initiative.
Yeah, and that's why we thought we would target like the first and second years, just due to the fact that that's their settling period in secondary school and they've met their new friends. And we kind of thought maybe this would be a really good age group to start with, you know, within the clubhouse, because we're using the clubhouse at the minute as a community centre almost as well. Yeah. Like, there's no prejudice against anyone. Everyone is welcome. And it's very much like just anyone from anywhere that wants to just be there is more than welcome. This is not like a GA night. This is not like
a community night.
Really like a community night, basically. Yeah. And like people from every community welcome, like from all over the county.
Yeah.
You know, because I do think like they have the rivalry on the pitch and they've got their friends on their games and their, but I just feel like probably communicating physically rather than virtually is starting to, it's just something that I've got a bit of a gripe with, basically, myself,
because
it's like monkey see, monkey do. Like, we're as bad. Like, I found myself out at night with the girls, and before I would leave, like, pull out of the car park at the restaurant, I would be back on my phone to see who was looking for me while I was out with my friends. You know, so, like, it's definitely monkey see, monkey do here.
And
like, we're all caught up.
I think, too, you've put it on at a good time, because the temptation might have been to put it on between, like, 5 and 7 or something, but these are young people whereby it gives it a little bit more feeling of something real. You know that it's between 9 and 11. I know it's not quite 9 and 11, but I think it's good that it's been put on a little bit later for them. So, it's the purpose of our conversation to say, if you're in the area, encourage your first and second years to come along in a fun, alcohol-free, safe environment to engage and meet with other people.
Exactly. Like, we have 22 volunteers on the WhatsApp group for the first and second year disco, which is absolutely phenomenal that we have 22 people willing to give up their Easter Sunday night to make this a safe environment for people. Like, we've got, like,
it's probably the only night out they're going to get themselves over.
Well, our heads will be banging in the morning, I would imagine, when DJ Shea gets behind the desk. But listen, we're willing to do it, and we're willing to, like, give the kids a chance to get out. Right. And we think going forward, this could be something that we would do, like, maybe every month or something like that. Like, we're not competing with the larger town discos by any matter or means. We were thinking maybe youth club type of setting, and then we went away from the youth club and they need something more.
I know from experience the window for these type of events in terms of age is very quite narrow, because you grow out of it really quite quickly, and then you're sort of wondering how you're going to do other things, right? So I think you've hit it right in the sweet spot of the age group.
You
know, and of course it's no competition to anybody else. It's a fantastic community event, and I hope it's really successful. So it's the Glenswilly GEA Clubhouse. It's going to be looking lovely. DJ Shea, did you say?
DJ Shea, yeah.
All right.
So Shea actually played last year at Saltfest, so we actually went quite high with our DJ, give them any excuses that it wasn't someone that they hadn't heard of. So we have top DJ, like, and we've done a lot of research into it. like we're going to have, like, we've spoke to other discos of similar nature through the country, like, that have been doing similar things, and like we're having like a free cloakroom for the kids coming in just to avoid them being able to like take stuff through the door that maybe we wouldn't want in the hall. Like, so we're offering a free cloakroom so that we're taking basically their coats and their bags from them, so that they're not going to be able to have anything that's not going to be
And it's all safe.
What we'd say, that it's all safe environment, and we have bouncers hired, and well, you know what we're doing, we're going to do it right if we're going to do it on Sunday night, so I can give
fantastic.
It a lash to
all
see.
Right. Girls are very interested. The boys just need a little kick up the bum because they're going to have a great night. And fair play to you, Breeda. I love your enthusiasm and your passion, and I really appreciate you speaking to me.
Oh, thank you, Greg, and I thank
Breeda.
You for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. So, first and second years, get along to the Glenswillie GEA Clubhouse Easter Sunday night. It'll give you 2 hours off, but also it sounds like it's going to be great fun. A brilliant DJ, DJ Shay, and also, perfectly safe and a different way for them to mix with each other.